Well, welcome to the underground. This is wonderful. Every time I look out over the underground family, I see so many people that are heroes in the faith and recovery warriors, and I love you. I love serving with you. We have so many exciting things we want to see happen, but I'm just going to jump right into our subject tonight. Talked a little bit last week about emotions, but we're going to kind of sneak up on it on this one. I start off with a question of why is it so hard for us to change? I mean, really, why is it so difficult? We talked in weeks past that we are a body, soul, and a spirit. And so as a body, soul, and spirit, there are physical reasons that are hard for, make it hard for me to change. And as a soul, there's personal reasons that make it very hard for me to change. And as a spirit, there are spiritual reasons, for sure, that make it hard for me to change. So we're going to hone in on kind of a couple of those tonight, a little bit. But why can't I just decide, you know, just through logic, that it makes sense for me to get up, I'm going to start exercising every day? Why can't I just do that? And why can't I just start eating right, consistently, reading my Bible, and a whole other list of things I'm going to quit doing? Why can't I just decide, you know, Jeff, I'm just going to quit doing this, and then that's it, right? No more process. Why is it so hard for me to change? And, you know, they are really hard after the study of the human brain, of how our brains can operate at such a high level and do such incredible things, calculations, facial recognition. Someone could throw, you know, an orange or something, I could just catch it, and all the calculations that are run at a high speed, how that's possible. They're always studying how our brains can operate the way it does on such low energy without requiring this giant battery pack to do it. My brain can actually operate on the tiniest bit of energy. And so they're always looking at how that works. And one of the things about it, that's kind of what makes it so hard to change, it's part of it, is that our brains want to save energy, want to conserve, so it makes a habit out of something. It goes subconscious. It becomes something I don't think about. Like, how long are you driving home the same route before you don't even think about it anymore? If all of a sudden right now you were driving in Japan, like right now, your brain would be working really, really hard to try to figure out how that works, right? Or one of those countries where the steering wheel is on the other side, right? I mean, you might do well at first, but if something happened real sudden, right, you'd be reaching for the window roller trying to change gears. I mean, you'd be making a mess, right? There'd be like Japanese people flying everywhere. And it's because our brains have learned subconscious, like, I don't have to think about it. It's conserving a huge amount of energy to do that. How about, you know, go 3/4 of the way home and then pull over and get a machete out and just hack your way through the woods to your house, like the rest of the way, like a different way. But, you know, pull the machete out, park the car, throw the keys out, and just here we go. There's going to be a big part of you that's like, nah, let's not do that, right? Because why? Because you could sit in a car and you could take a very, you know, well-maintained road all the way to your house, no problem. So why would you pull over and hack your way through the woods? Well, a lot of us, if you're like me, my superhighways were full of needles and drugs and things that were getting me arrested, things that were causing me divorce. The pathways I developed, my go-to, my subconscious reactions, you know, what I thought I needed to stay alive, to survive, those pathways were very, very dangerous, even though they were pathways for sure. I knew how to ride right down those roads. In fact, I would do it without thinking. So you're actually asking yourself, pull over and hack your way through the woods. And this is why you can't do it by yourself. I'm not going to make that decision by myself. How far am I going to get through the woods before I say, this is a lame idea. I don't think I'm going to do that. We also have to have the right motivation. Know it's going to be worth it. If I told you, 247,000 times 543, what is that without using your phone? Most of you are going to be like, what's the point? You're not going to do the problem. But if I said, I'm about to hand you that amount of money if you add this up, now all of a sudden, gears are turning and I'm now very motivated, to figure this out. So we have to have motivation to take on, brain work, because it is a lot of work. And I got to tell you guys, as an addict, I can tell you that I was very lazy, and I still struggle with it. Addict thinking is I want it now, now. At the end of my last crack binge, as a crack addict type thinker, you have no patience. You have no ability to wait. You want it right now. Where are you? Are you here yet? And everything's now, and it's very difficult to imagine planting seeds that are going to grow and harvest a life. It's very difficult to imagine a year from now, right? The other thing about change is it's hard when it's not familiar. We want to operate in familiar. This is a very difficult thing. If you're new here, this is a very difficult thing to come walking in here and sit down because it's not familiar. Part of your brain says, guys, this is not safe. You're looking around. What are they going to do? They're going to dump a bunch of pamphlets on me, ask me to sign something, dunk me in water. What are they going to do to me? We would rather operate in familiar, even if it's destructive, right? And I've talked a lot about our story. My sister's sitting right here. What was familiar to our family, the way we operated, very dangerous, would scare the tar out of most people, but it's familiar, so I'm drawn to it. In fact, want to recreate that in my own house. If I just let all systems go autopilot, I'm going to recreate what's familiar to me, and it's going to be very dangerous. I remember my wife and I going to a church event, and we hadn't gotten clean or sober, but somehow someone got us to this church event. And everyone in the room they were laughing, and there was this joy, and they're all and they were either looking to the right or the left. Everything was bright future, right? And we're looking around going, I don't see anybody drinking anything, right? I don't see them slipping out the back, smoking anything, nothing. This joy is very strange. It was really weird to us. We felt very unsafe, because we're I don't know what is going on here. For us to act like that, we would have to have a certain combination that we knew, and it wasn't happening in that arena of church stuff. So familiar is a very big part of it. And then if these behaviors that you want to stop doing are tied in any way to your worth as a person, if they're tied to getting a need met that is a real need, a core need, you are up against a real animal. If it's tied to a wound, like a primary wound, father wound, mother wound, a deep wound, if those behaviors and activities are tied to a deep wound, you're not going to just decide, I'm going to start and stop and here I go. We're talking about real warfare, real challenge. We're talking about a 350-pound gorilla on your back that's throwing you around, and you're like, why can't I just do what's right? It's really, really tough. And a lot of times these things are all tied together like a Jenga game. You don't have to work in recovery very long before you see all the tie-ins where you pull one string and it's connected to all these others. It's not so simple. People are like, why can't you just quit doing that? As if I wouldn't have if it were that simple, right? Example, and this is nobody here, okay? A lady that we were in contact with had this cupcake cookie addiction, right? Right next to her desk, she had all these cupcakes and cookies, and she was eating them, and very, very unhealthy. It clearly showed this was a problem. And so she was eating and eating and eating all day, and it's like, okay, why can't you just quit? What happens if you remove the cupcakes and cookies? Like, what would happen? And she said, well, my job is so overwhelmingly stressful. I take on like 3 people's work, and I could never do this. Hundreds and hundreds of emails I have to answer. I could never do my job, but I can do it if I have this going on. Whoa. So if you remove the cupcakes, why the job? It's so, why 3 people's work? Why are you buried in work? You're not taking care of yourself. What's going on? And you see, in the end, there is a deep father wound. There's this deep issue of, I don't feel safe, so I'm going to hide in my job. And what makes that possible, I can deal with working all the time and hiding, is I have these cupcakes. Like, do you see what I mean? So what I'm trying to say by that example is, if I take myself off of autopilot and I go rogue, you know, I'm going to have a brain that's using a lot more energy. I'm going to be kind of going limbic, going fight, flight, freeze, because now I'm very aware. So what would happen if you removed all of your buffers? If you took all your distractions away, all the texting, all the media, all the little extra eating of any kind, you know, anything that's an extra drink or eating or bells and whistles or any buffering, you removed all of it and you just stood with what your life was, what would your life be? Like, I mean, I stood there in our house the other day asking myself, what would my life be without anything that's a distraction or that's a coping mechanism or something my brain goes to when I feel uncomfortable? What would my life be? Can I create a life out of that so I don't need any of those things? And what would that look like? And you find out when you remove all those things and you sit in silence or stillness or this sense of being still. You know, a lot of chattering starts happening, right? A lot of drama, a lot of negotiating, a lot of scheming going on. Like, this is insane. You can't do this. And a lot of stuff starts coming up. And there's nothing wrong with you mentally. Your brain's trying to survive. And there's a lot of things that are going on. Let me show you a verse that I believe God gave me when I first entered recovery. I got it written down here. It's Isaiah 30:15. It says, this is what the sovereign Lord, the Holy One of Israel, says, only in returning to me and resting in me will you be saved. And you got to hear it the way I heard it. Only in returning to me and resting in me, Stan, will you be saved. Stan, in quietness and confidence is your strength. You put your own name in there, right? Only in returning to me, resting in me, will you be saved. In quietness and confidence is your strength. That really spoke to me deeply. That kind of reminds some of us of the 12 steps, right? Step 3, does that ring a bell? That verse, turning it over to the care of God. 12 steps are a very powerful process. 12 steps have been criticized a lot, overlooked a lot. It is a powerful, powerful tool. And it's not even really a tool, it's actually a lifestyle. 12 steps are a lifestyle of the most functional life a person could actually live. Really is. And the 12 steps rose out of the ashes of the onslaught of alcoholism that would take this country by storm. What are we going to do when prohibition is lifted and alcoholism just rose? The 12 steps rose, and I believe it was totally brought by God. And it is a powerful way to live. I use the 12 steps right now. I use it. I'll tell you how. I really want this session to go well. There's a lot on the line here tonight for many people. I want it to go really well. There's a lot of energy that goes into this. And that can give me anxiety, right? But guess what? I make a decision to turn this session over to the care of God because I believe in Him. I make that decision to turn it over to Him, and then I do an inventory. I look in and say, God, why do I want it to go well? So I look good, right? So that I am secure in some way. I'm significant in some way. Is it about me? Am I actually taking? And then I ask Him to remove any motive that's selfish, that's about me and what I think I need. And then I ask Him to replace that with a motive of love, because I'm already okay. I'm a son. I'm fine. God, help me just bring love. And so operating, using the 12 steps as a lifestyle helps me challenge not what I'm doing, but why am I doing it? Like, why am I doing everything I'm doing? And so God changes us, and He uses a process, and this is kind of a religious term, but He uses a process called repentance and faith. And what that means is repentance means a 180 from what I think I need to be okay, right? Think about this as an addict. What do I think I need to be okay? Like tonight, this weekend, this week. Like, what do I think I need to make me okay? And it's a 180 to what God has already done for me to make me okay. It's a 180 in a way of thinking and living, and I'm exercising faith. I'm okay. And so, repentance and faith. I'm leaving behind the old way of chasing down worth, chasing down security and significance on this planet, in this realm. I'm not going to find it here. Not going to find it here. And so I turn away from this world's way of getting security and significance, and I'm exercising faith and embracing my spirit man, my spiritual life, my life in God, that I'm loved. All right, so I'll show you this real quick. This is just one little concept. This is in Galatians. It says this. Check this out. The person who lives in right relationship with God does it by embracing what God arranges for him. Doing things for God is the opposite of entering into what God does for you. This is huge. This is huge. It's backwards to any way we normally think. Look over here, what I'm doing for you, God. And He's going, no, embrace what I've done for you. That's the way of power. One more passage here to show you this. It says, God sacrificed Jesus on the altar of the world to clear that world of sin. Having faith in Him sets us in the clear. God decided on this course of action in full view of the public to set the world in the clear with Himself through the sacrifice of Jesus. This is all God's work. See, finally taking care of the sins He had so patiently endured, this is not only clear, but it's now. This is current history. God sets things right. And you see here a pattern. You know, I don't want to sound confusing, but we're after deep change. Real change. Real change. I'll show you this. I like simple stuff. I'm going to draw this little flower. Oh, this cute little flower. Let's say this is you, right? Okay. We talked about this before, how we're born in life like this. Beautiful flower in a vase. And it looks pretty, looks beautiful, looks like it offers a lot. It's attractive. But what you don't see is the desperate fight for life going on in here. And it is desperate. How can it win? Can it win? Like, can it win? There's no way it's going to pull it off. But boy, look at it try. You go. Try harder, right? Like, tell it to try harder. Like, come on. You could do it. And this is kind of the situation we're born in. According to the scriptures, we are born, you know, in the Adams family, in this sense of separation, and we know it. I'm in an identity crisis. How can I find a sense of security to know that I'm loved, to know I'm accepted, forgiven, to know I'm important? And like what we just read is, like this is the realm of God, this tree. This is what God offers. This is like God here. And he offers us this little hand reaching out. And so he's telling me, Stan, I just want you to respond to what I've done. I want you to embrace what I've done. I want you to enter into who I am. And we do it by faith. And see what happens is I start bearing little leaves and fruit. I start developing this life. I mean, look at this thing. Isn't that awesome? I mean, I could sit there and stare at this for half a day. The nourishment, where is it coming from now? See, I'm no longer separated looking for something to make me okay. God's saying, in quietness and rest, Stan. Like, just in quietness, let me flow. The wisdom of this tree, the years of the realms of God, his wisdom, his life, the immune system of God, all this energy, I mean, it is a powerful thing. And Jesus said to his disciples, one of his last teachings he said to them before one of the fiercest times in their life was, he said, abide in me. He said, remain in me. He said, abide. Right? What if I said, Jeff, abide in the chair? Like, remain in the chair. Clearly, he should get up and start running around, right? One of the hardest things for me to learn how to do as a person coming out of addiction is to abide in the love of God, to remain in God, to rest in him, trust him. And so all this chatter and this noise starts to emerge. You guys know that they design grocery stores around this thing called brain fatigue. Totally true. They know that you're walking through the store and you're resisting and you're making choices and you're doing the right thing. But by the time you get up to that register, you have worn yourself out. And so look how close this stuff comes to you. And it's all really, really good and it's really, really now. And you are broken down and they know. They run numbers. I have sat in offices where they tell us the numbers of what these things make companies. Staggering. I mean, staggering what this does. To just reach out and grab. I resisted the pizza, the cake, all this stuff in every department. And now, I'm going to take that. And one of those. And so, when you think about that with addiction, it's so interesting because look how close you were to making it. Like what? 8 feet? 6 feet? Like I am right there about to make it, and I'm right here. It's all closed in on me, and I break down. And I know this from dealing with my own addictions and cravings, that oftentimes we have to exert the most amount of brain energy and the most amount of concentration right before the breakthrough, right before some freedom. I mean, right before we're walking out of that store. Yes. Like, I made it. And so that's a question that Glenn and I ask ourselves all the time. And we ask people, where are your check stands in your day? And you can know what they are. Most people know what they are. Why I wake up in the morning, where are my check stands that I'm going to face where it's going to come squeezing in on me? And if I could just make it through that check stand, I just made it through. A real close call, and I'm learning to do it. I never do well when I don't plan for them. When I just experience a check stand and go, oh, you know, I'm under all this pressure, right? I mean, I can think ahead. And I know where they're going to be. And I'm already seeing how I'm going to do it. I'm prepared for the pop-ups that are going to come in my mind. I'm prepared for the chatter. I'm prepared for what my mind's going to tell me. I already know what my mind's going to tell me. I know how I'm going to feel. and I know how I'm going to respond. I'm already there. I'm already through it. And we blow through those check stands all the time because we've thought through them. We've done the mental coaching way before we get in the store. And there's a thing called synaptic pruning where your brain, if you don't use it, exactly, it'll start cutting those things away. Cutting those things away. There's ways I don't think anymore. I've had things in my hand this week I never thought would pass through my hand, and it would be, no thanks. Just like that. I never thought I would be there. And it's all this work in my brain's cutting those pathways away, like they're growing over. That highway I used to run on, hardly recognize it now. Bushes and shrubs and weeds all growing over because we're taking a new path. We're doing this. They say it takes 28 days to form a new habit. Nope. Because it's about how many times you run that path. Right? If I cut that path and I turn right around and come back and I turn right around and come back, forget the 28 days. I'm running through it. And I'm doing it in my head an awful lot. When I wake up in the morning, I use the food analogy because I experience that a lot with our diet we're on. But if I come to town and I'm ravenously hungry, how am I going to do when I see pizza? You know, I'm just going to dive on it. But what if I'm full of all the good stuff? Like, it's going to be a lot easier for me. And so when I wake up, I already know I begin filling my love tank. I begin concentrating on what is true. And, you know, I want you to know, guys, something. And we're going to go through this identity series one step at a time. And I'm going to show you that if God is this color, if God's green, so am I. I'm the color God is. He's flowing in me. I'm a part of Him. I have been born of Him. I'm actually His son. Can you look yourself in the eye, in the mirror, and say, I'm His daughter? Can you say it? Can you do it? I can look myself right in the eye and say, stillborn, son of God, saved by His grace. That's big stuff. And I fill my love tank in quietness and trust, confidence. However that looks to you to do that, I fill my love tank up and I head to those places where I know I experience these check stands. And, you know, some people have made fun of that. I had a guy actually say the other day, you mean you use your imagination, right? And it sounded funny the way he said it. You mean your imagination? And I was like, kind of sounded goofy then. Like, I'm like, well, sort of. If you say it like that. But we talked about it. I said, you ever watch a movie and you just cry, like watching a movie? And he's like, well, of course. I'm like, you know that just a couple feet from those actors, there's cameras all around them? And they're playing this scene out, and you know it. You know that just feet from that whole scene, it's just a Hollywood set, cameras are rolling, go. And 2 minutes after that little scene where you were going, they got up and went to their trailer and they're calling their wife. Yeah, I got one more scene to film. Then I'm done with this dumb movie or whatever. And then he goes back to the scene and you're like, watching. You're feeling real feelings, guys. And it's all fake and you agree to it. Like, that's the agreement. That's the agreement we make with Hollywood. Guys, here's the deal. You act and get real good at acting. Okay? Don't let me see the cameras, and I'll feel real feelings. That's the deal we make, and we spend a ton of money on it. So I don't want to hear, you mean your imagination? Like, I don't want to hear that, because I'm basing my meditations, I'm basing my mental coaching, and I'm playing this game in a spiritual realm, and it happens to be realer than right here and now. It happens to be truth. So I'm not playing a game. I used to use my imagination to escape this world. Now I'm entering it in a powerful way. Because if I get my identity from a place that's not here, you can't take it from me. And I can love you unselfishly. Because it's not about me anymore. And I know this could be deep stuff, but I want you to know that my ability to deal with and experience negative emotions, so much of overcoming addiction depends on me being able to deal with negative feelings. And that is what we should be talking about in our meetings. When we sponsor one another and we sit down, we should be talking about the intense emotions that we're experiencing because we're not using. Because that's what's going to be coming up, and that's what we should be talking about. So really, really quick, I'll show you this little acronym. I like to say, when it comes to emotions, let it rain, right? Everybody say, let it rain.
Let it rain.
All right, that's cool. I'll actually draw a little raindrop, see? Look at that. And those were real feelings when you went, ah, that was real. That was real. Super quick, I'll show you this. And we do this all the time, my wife and I. Okay, so R is recognized, right? So I'm in the bathroom the other day. I'm getting ready for my day, and all of a sudden I feel this craving, this urge, this thing to use, to act out in some way. And I felt it. Right? So I spin around, I recognize it. What is that? There it is, right? And so, super important, I own it. It's not because of my wife, not because of what my dad said to me. It's no one else's, it's mine. Now, it might have a root in some of those things, but it's mine. I own it. And because I own it, I have authority. Ownership, authority, they go together. Really, really important. I name it. What is this? And I felt it, and I said, anxiety. That's anxiety. It's not actually an urge to use. It's actually anxiety, and I'm used to using when I feel. Naming something, owning something, that's all authority. Who's in charge, right? I'm in charge. I'm beginning to subtly take a position of I'm in charge of these feelings that I'm feeling. And believe me, I have dealt with a ton of craving. Owning it is so big. It's such a big part of it that it's mine and I own it. I remember, guys, and I'll tell you this. I got into an argument with a wife, right? And I'm just going to say real vague stuff. I used to have this thing I would do where when we would get into it, I would knock lamps. Like, it was one of my big moves, right? And I would knock these lamps flying, I would kick things over, and I would throw things, like, right? And I would have these veins coming across my bald face, right? Bah! Right? Could you see it? Bah! 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 And I would say horrible things. Just veins, right? Like, coming out of my neck. Real attractive, huh? All right. So I remember we got hauled into this. For some reason, we ended up sitting in front of this marriage counselor type guy. And I remember what he did just rocked me, actually shocked me. Because he goes, okay, Stan, I want you to tell me only what you did in the last 24 hours. I don't want to hear anything anyone else said, anything anyone else ever did. I want to hear what you did only in the last, only what you did. And if I started veering, well, only you. And it was crazy, guys. Should have heard what I was saying, right? Well, I went like this and knocked a lamp, and I'm thinking, I kicked this shelf over. I grabbed this chair and I bashed it, and then I threw some stuff. And then I got real vascular in my face, right? I'm like going through this list of what, only what I did. This is what I did. I ran to my room, got my dresser, and I took some pills. Like, I did this, I did this, I did this. This was my response. And I owned it 100%. It was crazy to only see me. And to realize I was assigning all that to everything and everyone around me as if they were somehow doing this to me. It was only me, guys, and it was crazy. So I got out of that office fast. So the first thing I did was recognize, it's sad but true, recognize, and I owned it, right? I'm in the bathroom the other day. I feel this urge. I turn. I recognize it. I own it. This is mine. I'm responsible for this feeling. This is mine. I'm going to name it anxiety, right? So it's mine. I own it. My side of the street I'm operating on. Two is the A in rain. I accept it. I mean, I accept it, really accept it. And that means I allow it. Come on in. This is nuts here, guys. If someone came up to you and started yelling at you, how good would it do if you turned and started yelling back at them? Like, now you got two problems, right? Now two people yelling. And this is what I've always done. How about if someone came and started yelling at me, so I was like, oh yeah, and I started taking pills. Like, how's that going to go? Now I got two big problems. So I realize I got to allow this thing. Now I can resist it, and that's what panic attacks are made of. When you resist a feeling, I'm afraid of the feeling, it's going to get humongous. So I'm not doing that. I could run from it, shut the bathroom door, crawl out the window, and run. That's what I've done my whole entire life. You know what, guys? I'm telling you the honest truth. It was the weirdest thing to stop and turn and meet a feeling that I had ran from for 20 years. The first time you do it, it is the strangest thing, guys. To turn and go, I ran from you for 20 years, got arrested, lost relationships because I was running from you. It's time we meet. Stand born, Son of God. Come on in. Let's talk. Allow it. I mean, really, really allow it. This is a powerful, powerful thing. And let me tell you, to allow a negative emotion, that's real growth. That's real power. I want my daughter, my wife and I want our daughter to be able to handle negative emotions. And the painful reality of that is, in order for her to handle them, she's got to have them. We got to let her experience those. Have at them, Morgan. You know, I want you to be able to handle this. And I'm rooting for her. And we're there for her. And that's a powerful thing. Okay. Three, the I is inquire. Okay, I've recognized it. I named it. I'm allowing it. Come on in. Step in my office. It's time we meet. Anxiety. And now I take the role of the observer and I inquire. I get curious. What are you? And I walk around it. I see myself feeling that feeling. Like, I really observe this emotion. I'm not trying to change it. I'm actually experiencing it. Like, if you could get into a booth, like, okay, I'm going to get into a booth, right? Put a dollar in, right? And then anxiety for 2 minutes, and I feel it, and I journal what it feels like. Right here, a little shaky, interesting, right? I'm interested. I'm not running, I'm not resistant, I'm not afraid. I'm actually journaling. This is what, if I had to describe it to a bunch of aliens that never, ever felt anxiety and go, let me explain to you what anxiety feels like. It's right around in here. It's kind of an emptiness, kind of a vibrating. Like, really, if I had to do a breakdown on this board of what it feels like to experience that feeling, I want to be able to do it on that level. Like, I really get curious and move in towards that emotion, and I start asking it a lot of questions. I sat there the other night, and I experienced this raging anger. And I just sat there in my rocking chair and just said, bring it on. And I just experienced what it felt like. It was actually kind of amazing because it finally went away. I just sat there going, this is what it feels like. Interesting. And I just felt it. I just allowed it. And there was a part of me that was like, welcome to the human race. Wow. I've been running from this for so long. Like, bring it. Is that all you got? You know, there was a part of me that was like that. And that's it? What if I doubled it? What would that be like? What if I wanted to experience this? How would I make it happen? You know, really getting curious. I'm fearless in it. So then N is nurture. My favorite part, nurture. You know, all of psychology agrees, guys, all of it, across the board, all cognitive behavior therapy, all of it agrees that your thinking produces your feelings. It's just, but here's my question, what creates my thinking? I mean, that's what I want to know then. And what it really comes down to is what you believe, mainly about yourself. Who are you? Like, what do you believe? Your core identity. If I wanted to change your behavior in a long-lasting, radical way, I would start changing how you see yourself in your identity, who you are, right? Did you know you're really German, Deb? Did you know? You know, just start working on that. Just start needling that. And this is kind of where we're going in this identity series. We're going to walk through how we know this is true and how we walk as sons and daughters of God. I mean, it is powerful. And it has changed my whole life. I'll never go back. I never want to live any other way than as a loved son. What would it be like for you to live loved? Who are you? I'm loved. Like, who are you? I am loved. That's who I am. So I'll tell you, there's two types of thinking, speaking, and acting. There's thinking that is of faith in my real identity, that I am who God says I am. I'm loved, I'm forgiven, I'm important because I'm his son. And the other kind of thinking that says I'm not his son. I'm insecure, right? I'm not important. I got to figure that out. I got to chase it. And there's two kinds of speaking. The kind of words that come out of my mouth that are of faith in my real identity, who I really am, who he says I am. Words that are saying what is true about who I am. Who are you, Stan? I'm loved. And the other kind of speaking is words that are coming from unbelief. Like, I'm not a son. I'm not okay. I'm insecure. I'm insignificant. Those words. And the two different kinds of actions, again, you know what I'm going to say. The kind of behavior that is of faith in my sonship. Guys, my devotions are just filled with the beauty of his love. I know what it's like to watch my garment come down as a priest in the morning, and I let my sleeves come over me, and I take on my role as a priest in my home. Thank you, God. I am a priest, and I'm going to begin praying. So standing in my true identity, guys, I just say this last thing here is standing in my true identity as one that God loves. I honestly can see where my addiction began in my life. I can see the void it tried to fill. I can see how it changed me, what I became. And I can return to this place of being centered in God as a loved spirit being. And I can return with this greater sense of gratitude than I've ever had before. I can return with a greater sense of wisdom, a sense of power and humility, and a love for people that are suffering from addiction, where they feel separate from love in some way. And they believe that and are medicating that disconnection. And it gives me the ability to carry the message on, the 12th step. So I hope you guys join us. So this week, I hope you guys let it rain. you know, allow those feelings to come and all that stuff that I talked about. So let me pray. Father, thank you for recovery. Help us welcome some feelings that we've run from for years and years. Just turn and wheel and say, come on in. Come on in. Let's have a talk. It's about time we meet. Thank you. In Jesus' name, amen.